And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
With the summer heating up to the 4th of July in less than a week, we're going to cool things down a bit as we put this show on ice. An ice sheet, that is, and one that everyone's suddenly talking about. It's up to Greenland to track down the rumors that things are slipping away a bit faster than we'd thought. When your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News, and now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Welcome to this summertime edition of the Wildside News. It's fun to imagine all of you folks out there listening to my show. Now, because it's an internet show, I happen to know a lot about you. For example, it's a whole new way of listening to radio. As you know, there's a new show every Thursday morning, like this morning. But it's interesting to see what day most of you listen. So, let's have you guess. Okay, Thursday, of course, that's the day that the show was aired first, Friday. Maybe over the weekend, or could it be Monday, or Tuesday, or Wednesday? Take your best shot here. Okay. Here's the results. Well, Thursday, thank you, has the most listeners. And then, it's a pretty even spread on Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday gets a bump up. Friday and the weekends, many of you have listened already and are planning to get out and enjoy things. Now, I imagined lots of listeners tuning in late at night, huddled by the candle in the cabin amongst all the tall cedars, computer monitor casting its cool blue light into the quieted darkness. But no, you seem to be a pretty day-friendly bunch, with most of you tuning in during the day and throughout the week. Of course, that's a relative thing, because although the bulk of my listeners tune in between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific time, that can be in reality a whole different time of day or night somewhere else on the planet. And that's interesting, because I happen to know where each of you is listening from. And this month, June, has been a very interesting month. I'm going to read to you my top five global markets. Okay, drum roll please. Coming in fifth, Los Angeles, California, just up the street from here in San Diego. And in fourth place, San Jose, California. Lots of enlightened, wealthy tree lovers up there. God love you. And in third place, Taipei, Taiwan. Now that puts a smile on my face. Taipei. If you're one of my Taipei listeners, I order you to send me an email and tell me about yourself. You are now ordered to contact me from Taipei, Taiwan. If you're listening to this show, use the contact button on the homepage. And remember, I'm also available to deliver talks. So, let's talk. Now, in second place, are we ready? London, England. So here's the deal for my London listeners. Any listener from London who sends me an email will get a personal call from me, and I'll make you famous here on the Wild Side News. That's a promise. Send me an email with your phone number, and we'll talk. And seeing as how we speak the same language, I'd be very happy to come to England as well and deliver a talk about nature and the environment in the Wild Side News. So send me an email and we can get things set up. Well now, let's get ready for first place. It's pretty obvious. It's the city with the most environmental wackos per capita, except perhaps Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and any other major metropolitan city. You have to guess that. Okay, here's a hint. It's not in Texas. Okay, this month's most avid fans are from San Francisco. Congratulations, San Fran, and thanks. Now, I'm going to make the same offer to all San Francisco listeners. If you send me an email with your name and phone number, now I'm not going to sell it to anyone or reveal this to anyone, it's just for me, I'll personally call you and we can record that conversation and you'll have a chance to speak your mind here on the Wild Side News. So if you're one of the San Francisco listeners, send me an email with your email address and phone number and your name and I will call you. And you'll be hearing yourself talking here on the Wild Side News. It'll be on my nickel. So use that contact info. You can send me an email at wildsidenews@cox.net. That's wildsidenews@cox.net. Okay. Now I'm just making up a contest. Tell you what I'll do. Whichever city ranks as my number one city in any particular month, wherever you are, I will personally call anyone who gives me his or her phone number from that city. I'll announce the winners, that is to say which city, is the top listener for any particular month, the first show of each month. All right. Today we've got a great show. This past week, we found out that scientists have discovered that that massive ice sheet we call Greenland, well, it's melting, as would be expected, except not exactly. Actually, it's melting 2 times as fast as expected. And that means we need to think about this because it's also reported that if the entire ice sheet melted, which certainly is possible with the way things are going with global warming these days, now that it's official, the oceans would rise a whopping 21 feet. Thank God my home, which overlooks the Pacific Ocean, is about 64 feet or so above the sea level, so I've got nothing to worry about. But there are lots of people between me and the sea that will become history. Of course, my property would be just that much closer to the beachfront, so that's a good thing. But, well, you get the point. So today we're talking with one of the world's leading scientists who spent a lot of time studying Greenland's glacier. And then we're going to remind you that with the 4th of July, here in the good old USA, it's Independence Day. And just like most Independence Days around the world, we celebrate with great enthusiasm and lots of exploding, shooting, twizzling, sparkling things called fireworks. Great fun. If you're a human. But for our pets and other creatures, very likely one of the most frightening days of the year. So we're going to get some great advice from a veterinarian about what we should and should not do to help our pets get through our big day this 4th of July. So as always, there's a lot of great stuff about our planet and we the keepers when your voice of the earth continues following this week's news. So now, the news. Devastating summer rains continue in the eastern U.S., causing closures of numerous federal buildings in the nation's capital, including the IRS and the National Archives, and forcing a state of emergency to be declared in parts of New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. Dramatic quantities of water are falling in squalls and downpours, and the prospect of the storm subsiding is not yet in the cards. In Maryland and Pennsylvania, more than 12 inches have fallen in the past 4 days. That massive amount of water is now funneling into the streams and rivers throughout the region, and flooding is widespread. The town of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, has been ordered to completely evacuate as the Susquehanna River reaches flood stage. Thursday morning, 200,000 residents have been ordered to leave as a precaution of a possible levee breach, which would have devastating consequences to this valley town. Good luck to our friends in the Atlantic states. Meanwhile, in Niger, Niger's president Mamadou Tanja and his cabinet joined thousands of Muslims who flocked to mosques on Wednesday to pray for rain to remove the divine discontent they fear may bring famine. Religious leaders said God was punishing the West African country by withholding seasonal rains and urged believers to confess their sins, hoping to avert the repeat of a food crisis that left millions hungry last year. Subsistence farmers have started to worry about a late start to the rainy season, and Muslim leaders have called for mass prayers after the 2004-2005 harvest was devastated by drought, leaving some 3.6 million people short of food last year. The National Academy of Sciences have concluded, after years of research in a broad spectrum of the sciences, that the recent warmth is unprecedented for at least the last 400 years and potentially the last several millennia. The Academy produced the report at the urging of Congress. The 155-page report concludes that human activities are much responsible for the increase and that about half of the extra hurricane-fueled warmth in the North Atlantic in 2005 was due to the effects of a warming ocean, and not, as some critics have claimed, that it was simply a seasonal aberration that occurs naturally. The National Academy of Sciences is a private organization authorized by Congress to advise the government on scientific matters. Spain is considering a resolution granting higher primates the same rights to life and freedom as humans. The resolution applies to apes, chimpanzees, and orangutans, and has the support of the socialist PSOE party, and seems destined to become law. Under the resolution, great apes would come under moral guardianship of the state should they be threatened or mistreated. Laws passed in Spain could have spillover effects into other European countries as well. The Catholic Church, which originally considered such efforts ludicrous, have since reversed their position and are supporting the resolution. U.S. skeptics generally find the European plans a danger to other intelligent life, as if voting privileges should ultimately be extended to apes and orangutans in the future, they fear such could swell the ranks of the more conservative factions in the United States. And that's the news. And a few reminders. You're seeing a whole new Wildside News website. It's getting better every day. If you have any suggestions, contact us at wildsidenews@cox.net. And now, to today's feature. This last week, there's been a surge of interest in Greenland for a number of reasons. But the main reason, there's a new story that's coming out that suggests that the Greenland ice sheets, the ice mass, is melting at a much higher rate than before. There are some dire predictions that, for example, if the entire Greenland ice sheet were to melt, the oceans would rise by 21 feet, which would certainly have an effect on every coastal community around the world. Well, that is what's being discussed right now, and our job always is to try to bring this information and shed light on it. And someone who can definitely help us with that is Dr. Jay Zwali, who works with NASA, specifically in their cryospheric sciences program. He's talking to us now from Maryland. Dr. Zwali, thanks for joining us here on the Wildside News.
Hello, it's nice to be here with you.
Why don't you give us your definition of cryospheric sciences?
Well, cryospheric sciences is a term that has been used sort of parallel to atmospheric sciences, and it refers mainly to the study of ice around the world. This is the sea ice in the polar oceans, the ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica, small glaciers around the world, and also snow cover, seasonal snow cover.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been involved in this for a very long time, going back to the 70s. Tell us about how you got started in cryospheric sciences.
Well, I was actually a physicist in the early 70s when the employment opportunities for physicists were pretty slim, and I got very fortunate. I had an opportunity to go to the National Science Foundation in their Office of Polar Programs, and after I was there for a couple of months, they asked me to manage the glaciology program.
Now, back then, it was just kind of probably an obscure science to a certain degree.
Well, the big thing that was going on then was the deep drilling, which had started in the late 60s, and this produced some deep drills several thousand meters, both in Greenland and Antarctica. And from these cores, which have evidence of past temperatures, came some of the best nation on the changes in temperature as we came from the last ice age into the present climate warming.
Yeah, that was great science because it was all new.
Right. And that has continued in a very exciting manner, producing all sorts of information like the past content of CO2 in the atmosphere and how this has increased during the Industrial Revolution up until present time. So there's a wealth of scientific information that has come from these ice core drillings.
You've been doing research in various parts of the world, but the area that you've really focused on in the last, you'll have to tell me, but probably at least 10 years or something, is your work in Greenland. What brought you to Greenland?
Well, one of the things that I became interested in when I was at the National Science Foundation was the mass balance of the ice sheets. Very simply, are the ice sheets growing or shrinking? Is there more mass going in than going out? And after I was at the Science Foundation for a couple of years, I came to NASA, and that's when I started working on this problem using satellite data. And then in the 90s, what took me to Greenland first was to go up with a colleague who has a camp up there called the Swiss Camp at the Equilibrium Line. And so I went up there first to go along and help out and took along a GPS receiver. And then the second year, we put in an automatic GPS receiver to record throughout the year, and that's led to a lot of new information.
So you've spent over 10 years tracking the information from the glacial sheet in Greenland, and apparently a lot of your work is being done with the assistance from outer space, the satellite technologies, in terms of monitoring all sorts of different parameters. Why don't you help us understand how that's helping you out?
Well, the key thing I do, the most important thing I do, I guess, with NASA and my day job is I'm project scientist for a satellite called ISAT. This has the laser altimeter on that measures very accurately the height of the ice sheets, and so we look for changes in the thickness of the ice sheets that tell us about changes in the ice volume and therefore give us information on the mass balance, whether they're growing or shrinking. Another key thing that does is it measures the height of floating sea ice above the ocean. And from that, we deduce the thickness of the sea ice. And so we're starting to get some very important measurements on how the sea ice thickness is changing in polar regions also.
Well, when you look at Greenland, particularly from that perspective, which gives you, otherwise it would be very difficult to do that type of research, and from what I understand, these satellites are giving you terrific amounts of information. You set some sort of a record with a million different data points, which you're able to watch almost in real time, I suppose. Let's start out by giving a brief introduction to glaciology, the fact that there is this relationship between the buildup and the melting. There's a dynamic there. Give us a sense of how that works.
Well, I think the first thing to do is to get a picture of what an ice sheet is. It's the Greenland ice sheet is 2 miles thick in the center. It goes up to 11,000, 12,000 feet. And the upper parts, the elevation is above 1,200 meters, is the net accumulation. So all the snow that falls there stays there. And then this causes the ice to flow under its own weight, and it flows towards the coast. And at the lower elevations, below about 1,200 meters, it has net melting. That's net ablation. Now, some of the ice that leaves Greenland leaves in water from running off the melting in the surface and getting down to the base and running out into the land, some into the ocean, and part of it goes through outlet glaciers. These are places where the ice flows into the ocean and creates icebergs, one of which sank the Titanic some years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is really where your research is creating news, because what you're finding out is that the rate of movement of the glaciers, aspects of the Greenland ice sheet, are suddenly changing dramatically. What are you finding out?
We just completed a survey using satellite radar altimetry data for the 1990s, essentially the last decade of the last century. And what we found there was that the ice sheet was slightly growing, was gaining a little bit of mass. But the significance of that was that we found that it was growing in the center and thinning at the edges. This is exactly what we expected from climate warming. Increased snowfall causes it to grow in the center, and increased temperatures cause it to melt at the edges. So that was something that was very consistent with climate change. Now, what has happened in the last 5 years is that a lot of the glaciers in the southern part of Greenland have started to speed up. Some of them have actually doubled their velocity. So there's more ice coming out, and at the same time, the surface melting has increased. So we've gone from this period of a slight growth to now a negative mass balance. So that Greenland is now losing mass. And these changes have taken place in only about 5 years of time.
Also, give us a sense of what it means to be racing to the sea in glacial terms.
Well, some places the ice is moving what seems to be rather slowly. At the Swift Camp, the ice is moving about 33 centimeters a day, and it's about a foot a day. And so it moves about a little more than a football field every year. That's the slower flow. But then when you go south of that to Jakobshavn Glacier, which is the fastest flowing glacier in Greenland, there the velocities are measured in kilometers per year. And what's happened there on Jakobshavn, which has drawn so much attention recently, is that the ice has sped up. Since about 1996, the velocity has doubled, so it's now flowing about 12 or 13 kilometers per year.
Let's translate that to miles for people who can't relate to that.
Well, the easiest thing to do to take a mile and multiply it by 0.6. So 12 kilometers a year would be about 7 miles. And so it's gone from about 3 miles a year to 7 miles a year.
Mm, that's a lot. That's phenomenal. You could almost watch that.
Yes, you can. You could almost see it moving if you stand there. Mm-hmm. It'll be moving, I suppose, a meter an hour or something. Yeah. Somebody can run the calculation. But the other significant thing that's happened there is that that glacier comes down into the ocean and forms a floating ice tongue in the fjord. That ice tongue has almost totally disappeared in the space of about 6 or 7 years.
And, of course, now that's part of the debate. What you're calling the ice tongue may have had an effect in slowing down the advance of the glaciers when that's not there. Now you have an open glacial melt going right into the sea. What are your concerns there?
Well, we have scientists have expected for a long time that when the floating part is removed, this takes away a restraining force for the ice that's flowing down. And in the Antarctic Peninsula of Antarctic, the Larsen B ice shelf, which is featured in the Day After Tomorrow movie, what we found, actually this has been shown by ICESat measurements, that the glaciers behind that have sped up. They've increased in their thinning due to this lack of restraining force that was there from the ice shelf. Now, a similar thing is happening in Greenland on the Jakobshavn Glacier. This floating ice is almost disappeared, and it's now back at a point where it no longer has a floating part, back to what's called the grounding line. And the big question is the configuration of this similar to what we see in the Antarctic? Is the ice behind that going to speed up and flow into the ocean faster? And we don't really know. We're just sort of doing an experiment, and we have theories and ideas, but we're just going to have to see what happens.
The Greenland glaciers are heating up, and there's more to this story coming up following this short break.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.